Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. October 2001, Miami, Florida. A babysitter contacted police to report the abduction of the one-year-old boy she was minding, talking about the elaborate armed robbery that left her and her partner bound with duct tape and frightened. However, investigators soon realised this version of events didn't match the evidence at the crime scene. This is Jacarias's story. Jacarias Atside was born September 30th, 2000 in Miami, Florida, to parents Tamara Jones and Joshua Atside. He was lovingly nicknamed Kiri and Keisha. The family were doing it tough, with the couple and their seven children living in a two-bedroom apartment, with the only furniture they owned being beds. Unfortunately, in October 2001, when our story takes place, both Tamara and Joshua were in jail. Tamara in a Palm Beach jail, facing charges of an attempted theft at a Berndines department store, and Joshua in Hillsborough County Jail, awaiting trial for arms trafficking. 2 days before the disappearance, Jacarias was placed into the custody of Gwendolyn Brown. She was Tamara's cousin and babysat for the toddler regularly. Gwendolyn living with her boyfriend Jeffrey Cochran on the corner of Southwest 296th Street and 158th Avenue, Miami, Florida. And because Jacarias had spent so much time with Gwendolyn in the past, Tamara never had a doubt that her baby would be safe in her cousin's care. October 18, 2001, in the early morning hours, Jacarias was left in Jeffrey's care while Gwendolyn walked her teenage daughter to the bus stop. What happens next is dependent on the source material. According to the Charlie Project, which given the lack of information available in this story, the Charlie Project was my main source material. But according to the Charlie Project, Gwendolyn later told police that the robbery took place while she was walking with her daughter, and when she returned home, she was confronted by three armed suspects. But other sources say that Gwendolyn was confronted outside her home and she was forced up 17 steps into her apartment at gunpoint, that they jumped out from between a bush and a shed at the side of her home. Regardless, once inside, Gwendolyn and Jeffrey were bound at duct tape while the robbers demanded money. When they weren't getting the answers they were looking for, the robbers went through the house, completely destroying everything in their path, looking for money and valuables. Gwendolyn said just before the robbers left, she heard a single gunshot. It would allegedly take the couple 2 hours to free themselves from the duct tape, and when they did, they realised the house was ransacked and Jacarias was missing. He would never be seen again. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. When police arrived at the scene, they found a blood-stained mattress and blood-soaked sheets. Blood was also found in other areas of the home as well. When forensically tested, it was determined that blood belonged to Jacarias. Based on the amount of blood that was found, investigators believe the likelihood of the boy surviving is minimal. He would have at least needed immediate medical attention, and there was no reports of a boy matching Jacarias' description at any local hospitals or urgent care. Police also found several grams of cocaine in the house, leading Gwendolyn and Jeffrey being arrested on drug charges. I did read on the Charlie Project that Jeffrey had an extensive criminal history, previously serving nearly 10 years in prison for drug trafficking. Investigators have made it clear that they are sceptical of Gwendolyn and Jeffrey's story, mainly due to the length of time between the alleged abduction and the call to 911. 2 hours is a long time. However, the couple are adamant that this was how long it took them to free themselves. Something that may support this being true was Gwendolyn was on disability at the time, and Jeffrey had recently had a stroke and wasn't able to see well. So maybe that's why it took them so long to get free. The couple weren't able to give descriptions of the three suspects, other than they were black men, and the drugs. Why wouldn't the robbers take the drugs with them? Surely they could have sold them and made money in a situation where it doesn't appear anything of worth monetarily was taken. But what didn't make sense to investigators was why would they take the baby, other than maybe he was killed by accident during the robbery, and maybe these robbers were trying to cover up what they had done. Police spokesperson Juan del Castro, during a press conference, quote, "Why would anyone take a child? We don't know. But we've checked everywhere we could, including a nearby canal," unquote. However, to me, again, it seems that if money was the main motivator here, why not ask for a ransom then? We've seen this in other cases where the child has already passed and the abductors still go forward with the ransom demand. Yet there was nothing. That is, unless Zacharias was sold to the highest bidder elsewhere, either to another family or for more nefarious reasons. Also, the time of the robbery is curious to me. Given Gwendolyn was walking her daughter to the bus stop, I would assume this was for school, so even though it was early, it would have been daylight. Others going to school and going to work. It seems to be extremely daring for the robbers to attempt this crime, where there could have been potential witnesses that could later identify them. But to the time of this recording, there has never been anyone to come forward to report seeing or hearing anything unusual to corroborate Jeffrey and Gwendolyn's story. For what it's worth, Gwendolyn was said to have been so shaken from the experience that she immediately hired someone to cut down all the greenery in her yard. And while investigators have said they don't believe the robbery and abduction was related to either the parents nor Jeffrey's criminal past, according to some contemporary news articles, when asked whether he knew what's happened to Zacharias, Jeffrey simply replied, quote, "Man, I don't know. I guess my past is catching up with me," unquote. 3 days after Zacharias went missing, October 21st, 2001, the baby's mother Tamara posted bond and was released from jail. From then on through, Tamara did all she could to bring attention to her son's disappearance. She has said that despite the evidence at Gwendolyn's home, she believes Zacharias is still alive and someone is raising him as their own. Heartbreakingly, Tamara spoke of her child closest in age to Zacharias, a 4-year-old boy. This sweet little boy kept crying for his brother to come home. October 23, 2001, the Miami-Dade homicide detectives took over the case, in a decision that allowed more manpower to be dedicated to finding the missing toddler. According to the police, there were many clues as the intruders left behind fingerprints and paper evidence while ransacking the home, destroying furniture and ripping open ceiling vents. However, despite this potential forensic evidence, authorities have never named any suspects. The last update in this story I could find was in 2018 for National Missing Kids Week. The Palm Beach Sheriff's Office posted about Zacharias' abduction on its social media accounts. But there have been no updates in quite some time, and the missing person's case is considered now cold. At the time of his disappearance, Zacharias at sight was 1 year old. He's African-American with brown hair and brown eyes. He was last seen wearing only a diaper and a t-shirt. If Zacharias is still alive today, he would be about to celebrate his 25th birthday. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Zacharias Adside, please contact the Miami-Dade Police Department on 305-471-8477. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the story we discussed today, or any stories we talk about here on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives Podcast on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the Stolen Lives discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. We are now on YouTube. 2 episodes a month where you'll get an exclusive video including photos, maps and news clips. We are still learning what we are doing, so please be kind. But we would appreciate it if you head on over and give our videos a like and subscribe to the channel. This all will allow me to share more of the stories you want to hear. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.